I want to welcome everyone to downtown Fort Worth and the inaugural Baylor Conversation Series outside of Waco. To our distinguished guests from Baylor, welcome to our great city. We look forward to spending the evening with you, and we thank you for choosing to come fling your green and gold here amongst the pool of purple in Fort Worth. It always makes Fort Worth a little bit brighter place when Baylor dignitaries are in town. And to all of you, our Baylor family, thank you for attending this evening. I hope that everyone enjoyed the frog leg appetizers during the reception. All right, you know, they weren't really frog legs. And if, in case you don't know, you can't tell the difference. It tastes just like Jayhawk. I mean, chicken. Tonight, we're here to listen to a conversation with our new president and esteemed regent chairman on the state of the university. As part of that conversation, you will have an opportunity to ask a few questions of our Baylor leaders. While they're both relatively new in their Baylor leadership roles, they're both extraordinarily equipped and prepared to lead Baylor forward. So it is my honor and privilege to announce our stage party for the evening. Our host for the evening is Ms. Lori Fogelman, Baylor's Assistant Vice President for Media Communications. Lori has been at Baylor for nearly 20 years and is finishing her final year as the radio commentator for the Lady Bears basketball team, a national championship, as I am prepared to predict, would be a great send-off for her. Opposite Lori on the stage is Mr. Joel Allison, Baylor's chairman of the Board of Regents. We welcome Joel back home to the DFW Metroplex as he retired about a year ago as the president and CEO of Baylor Scott & White Health after more than 40 years in healthcare management. And of course, the 15th president of Baylor University, Dr. Linda Livingstone. Dr. Livingstone returned to Baylor on June 1st of last year after serving as the business school dean at both George Washington and Pepperdine Universities. She has already endeared herself to current Baylor students and is making bold moves to elevate Baylor as one of the preeminent universities across this country. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Baylor Conversation Series. Lori, the program's all yours.
All right, thank you very much, Jeff. Thank you very much for that very gracious and humorous introduction. We do love the fact that you are predicting a national championship for our Lady Bears. We agree with you there.
That's right.
Well, we do welcome you to the inaugural Baylor Conversation Series outside of the city of Waco and from the campus of Baylor University. The purpose is for President Livingstone and Chairman Allison to address the state of the university with you, members of our Baylor family, and then give you an opportunity to ask questions that may not have been answered during our conversation that we will have here today. Now, Fort Worth is the first stop of our tour, if you will, and we have other stops that are planned in Dallas, Houston, Austin. We'll be in Denver, Atlanta, several cities in California, and also in Washington, D.C. And we look forward to continuing those wonderful conversation events, and we hope that you will enjoy this evening's conversation. President Livingstone, we'll begin with you. You are coming up on your first year since you were announced as Baylor's 15th president. You have now had a full semester that you've completed in the fall, also starting with us in the summer. As you've traveled across the country and you've had the opportunity to talk with members of the Baylor family, what has surprised you the most? And then if you could tell us, what is your favorite memory so far of serving as Baylor's president?
Sure. Well, thank you, Lori. Let me first start by just thanking all of you for being here. I've already heard some wonderful Baylor stories, and I've actually reconnected with some Pepperdine friends who have a child at Baylor, which is great fun. So already having a wonderful time this evening connecting with all of you. And I do have to say, I think one of the things that has been, I don't know that it was surprising, but as I've traveled around and met so many people, is just reminded, since I was here before, you sort of are reminded of many things as you come back, but just about how deeply held people's care and concern and love for Baylor is. Even when we disagree on things or have difficult circumstances that we have to work through, at the core, people love the institution, they want to help the institution, and And they want to come together and help move us forward. And so that's been really affirming for me as a new president. And I think it just says a lot about the Baylor community and the type of university we are that brings people together like that and leads to that really deep connection. In terms of kind of what I've been, some experience or something that's been very meaningful, I think I'll mention two things. One's more personal and the other's more university related. I don't know if any of you were able to be at the inauguration in October, but that, of course, was a very affirming and wonderful event for me personally. But I think the part of it that I enjoyed most, my daughter, who was a senior at Rice University, did my introduction. And she did just an amazing, amazing job with the introduction. And I had so many people afterwards go, oh, my gosh, Shelby did such a great job. Now, you were okay, too, but Shelby did a really, really good job. And so I've told Lori and Jason to never let me speak after Shelby ever again. But that was really a special moment for me personally, for our family, I certainly hope for the university. But I think in terms of the university, and this may seem like an odd one, but as I've reflected on the first sort of 8 or 9 months, I don't know if any of you were at the University of Texas football game, but prior to that game, we did the running of the Baylor line for the women who were not able to run the line between 74 and 94 when we just allowed men to do that. And that moment, for me, is really very meaningful. One, the women just loved it. I mean, the women were in tears, and they were so excited that they finally got to do this. And so for me, it was actually kind of symbolic as I reflect back on it, partly because here's this experience that is so embedded in the life of Baylor, and it represents our values and it represents our traditions and what it means to be a part of Baylor through many, many years. But it also, I think, sort of reflected the future that we actually recognize sometimes that we need to change the way we do things and we need to move forward and we need to maybe make up for things we've done in the past that we reflect back on and think, well, maybe that wasn't the best way to do things. And so that moment for me kind of brings together the history and values and tradition of Baylor with the need to move forward and to look to the future and to be willing to change and think about where we go forward as a university. So that was a really important moment for me as I think back on my first few months in the presidency.
All right. And we've watched the two of you interact with one another after board meetings. We have media briefings with news reporters. And it's so evident that you both love Baylor deeply, that the alignment is there and deep passion for Baylor. Chairman Allison, let's direct this question to you. You've worked with so many executives throughout your career. Jeff was just talking about 40 years as a healthcare executive, so you've worked with many other executives. Mm-hmm. What kind of unique qualities did you see in Dr. Livingstone that she brings here to Baylor?
Yeah, thank you, Lori, and again, let me add my thanks to all of you for being here. It's great to have a great turnout like this. And Jeff, thank you for your kind words. It's great to be in a room full of green and gold in Fort Worth and not see any purple. It's a friendly group. So thank you all for being here. But seriously, Lori, to your question, let me just say this. I have had the privilege, and it's been a blessing over my career to work with some of the finest executives I've ever known, what I would consider high-performing executive CEOs, worked with some great men and women in leadership positions. And let me say, when you look at that list, I would put Dr. Livingstone at the very top because she has the qualities and the traits of what I believe you see in a truly outstanding, committed leader. And let me just mention some of those. Number one, as we were going through the search process, and we had certain criteria we were looking for, and obviously the first was a truly committed Christian. Top of the list, check that off. I truly believe, folks, Dr. Livingstone was called by God to come to Baylor at this critical time in our life to lead this university. She comes with the integrity, the authenticity, the authentic leadership that you look for. She's engaging, as you heard. She's a relationship builder. She's a great communicator, as you're going to see this evening if you haven't heard her speak before. She is really one of the leaders that I think is, again, that expresses that humility in the right way. She's a humble leader. She's passionate. I think as we both began our positions in June 1, I think we both appreciated the passion and love we have for Baylor. She's also compassionate. She cares about our students, our faculty, our constituents. So when I look at the list of the leadership qualities, and I would probably put it even at the top of the list after committed Christian, Dr. Livingstone is truly a servant leader. And that's what I admired the most about her as we were going through the process. So when we looked at the criteria we were looking for, you add to that the competency she has and the capability as a manager. She understands how to run organizations. That's her background. If you know anything about her background, it's around the running organization. She's served on board. She understands the role of management and board. She's got savvy. I call it emotional intelligence as you lead an organization. So I would check every box. And then to top it off, she played basketball in the Big 12. She's an athlete. She understands that side of academic excellence and excellence on the field and on the in the court, on the court. So again, I have it's been a privilege. Let me tell you, it's been a blessing and a privilege to be able to work with Dr. Livingstone these past 7 or 8 months. As Jeff said, I retired. I didn't move to Waco to become chair of the board. That was not in my wife's plan. So, again, I'm so thankful for her because she is leading the university and doing a great job.
All right, well, let's take the conversation to campus. Our students are in the middle of midterms right now.
Yes,
they are. The spring semester is about halfway through. If you look over your past a semester and a half, how would you characterize this time? And what's the state of affairs at the university?
Sure. Well, you know, it's been kind of fun to watch what goes on our campus. And I think I've spent a lot of time since I've been back on campus listening, whether it's on campus to our faculty, staff, and students, or whether it's out across the state of Texas and across the country. And I think one of the things that I've noticed as I've been back and over that time is how strong and resilient the institution is, even after having gone through a very, very difficult time. But I also think the thing that's been real interesting is, you know, campus life is just very normal. I mean, students go to class, they participate in extracurricular activities, the faculty teach, they do their research. So I think a sense of kind of normalcy has come back to the campus that we were missing for a while, and I think that's been a very positive thing. And then in the midst of that, and I know we're going to talk more about this in a little bit, but I think everybody's really excited about looking forward to the work we're doing on the academic strategic plan because it gives us a chance to look to the future, to think about what we can even do more of as an institution, how we can have an even bigger impact, both locally and nationally and internationally. So I think it's exciting. You know, it's sort of normal life on campus, but also an optimism about looking to the future.
Yeah, and we'll circle back on the academic strategic plan here in just a moment. Chairman Allison, the Board of Regents has undergone massive governance changes in the past year and went through an overhaul last year at this time. So how has this changed the board, and why are these governance reforms so important? Yeah.
Well, we went through a significant governance reform review, and we realized that we needed to make some changes in our structure. The board appointed a governance review task force that some of you may be aware of, and that governance review task force was made up of 6 people, 3 non-regents, 3 regents. The chair of the committee was a non-regent because we felt we needed to be looking at how we are structured, how we operate to improve. We needed to do a better job in board governance and to understand what board governance is about. So when the Governance Review Task Force brought forth their recommendations, almost about 50 recommendations, and we began implementing those last year. In June was when in May of last year, we approved the changes and we started implementing them. We've had 3 board meetings now under our new governance structure. And so let me just highlight some of those changes, which I think have made us a much better board today than we've been in the past. Number one, start with the chair. The chair now, under the new bylaws, is eligible to have 3 one-year terms, but you have to serve 1 year at a time. So my first term is up this May. Then it's up to the board whether I'm reelected or not. If the chair is not reelected for that next year, then you would become an immediate past chair, and you'd serve 1 year as immediate past chair, and then you're off the board, regardless of how many years you may have on your term. So that was a good change going forward. I also, as I went through the storm, I wanted to know what's the role of the chair, what's the power of the chair. Well, I found out I have two powers. One, I get to select the parliamentarian. Very important. Spend a lot of time doing that. Second power I have is that I am allowed to chair the board meetings if I am mentally and physically capable. I've had some questions over the last few months, but that's it. We have a much more engaged board with those selections. So that's one change. Next, we used to only have one vice chair. We now have three vice chairs, and they work in different areas of responsibility to work with the board and with committees. Another major change, and incidentally, we also have a region selection task force now that brings forth nominations for new regions. And again, that's chaired by non-regents, and we have three non-regents that are on the region selection task force. We have looked at the committee structure. One of the changes we've made is that we went from six committees to eight because we split a couple of committees. Audit and compliance used to be together. Because of the importance and value we put on compliance, we split audit and compliance. So there's an audit chair and a compliance chair. We split the compensation, governance, and leadership committee into university leadership and compensation, and then nominating governance committee, which is a better practice. So we now have eight committees. And the other change we made was it used to be we would meet on Thursday in committee meetings and two would meet simultaneously, so you only could go to your own committee meeting. We now meet 3 days. We start on Wednesday, and every regent can attend every committee meeting in addition to the committee members, so that we're much more open and much more transparent. And that was one of the things we wanted to see, where everybody would be informed and engaged. So we now go all day Wednesday, all day Thursday, and then the full board meeting on Friday. Even if we have conference calls in between, anybody can call in. We make that available to all the regions. The other change we made was we added voting members to the board that were before ex officio, i.e. we now have the faculty reps. We had two faculty reps. They are now voting regents. We have two students, one a first year as a junior and one's a senior. The first year would not vote, we'd still be ex officio, but the senior would be a voting regent. So that's been added. We have four alumni elected regents now based on our relationship with the Baylor Lyon Foundation. We also have the representative from the Letter Winners Association that was ex officio is now a voting member. And the representative from the Bear Foundation is a voting member. It also called for in our governance reform task force work was to create a regent emeriti committee. We only have two living regent emeriti, Drayton McClain and Sue Gederman. The chair of that committee, and this time is Drayton McClain, is a voting member of the board and also a voting member of the executive committee. So we have expanded the board now. We have 41 voting members, 42 members counting the student ex officio. So those were some of the key changes that we have made to improve the transparency. We spent a lot of time in July of last year, our retreat, working on how to be a better board. We had a representative from the Association of Governing Boards come in and work with the board, and looking at our roles and responsibilities and making sure we understood the role of the board vis-a-vis the role of management and understand that bright line so that there's not overreach. And basically what we've all agreed to and the board, when we talked about this in the July meeting, is that the board has really, the first thing you do is you hire and fire the CEO. That's always the board's first responsibility.
I like the hire part better.
Big emphasis on the hire and keep. Yeah. The other three are, number one is you've got a fiduciary responsibility. We as Board of Regents, we are responsible and ultimately at the end of the day, and you have a fiduciary responsibility, and that's the oversight you give. The second area is the strategic role you play in looking at the strategic plan, approving that along with the budget to give the resources for that. And that's really the foresight that you provide as a board leadership. And the third one is what we call generative, or that's the insight that you glean from your board, from the different levels of knowledge and expertise that a CEO can pull it together. And you want to be sure you're spending your appropriate time. So we talk very clearly about the board's going to be the board. My job, as chair, I said, as we adopt these responsibilities, is to be sure that's what the board's doing. I would also mention that on the committee chairs, which is important, and I know there was some questions. In the past, the chair appointed the committee chairs unilaterally. That's changed. It goes through a nominating governance committee process. Everybody has a chance to send in. In fact, a survey is going out probably in the next week or so to see who wants to serve on committees, who's willing to serve as a chair or a vice chair of that committee. So that's a good positive change. And then the last thing that we adopted as a board, again, when I was asked to step in, I accepted because I love Baylor. It was about how much everybody that is in this room loves Baylor. But we said, when we come to making decisions, we're going to run our decision-making through four screens. And the board agreed, and Dr. Livingstone agreed as well. The first question you ask is, will this decision keep Baylor University a Christ-centered university? Number two, will this decision stay true to our mission at Baylor University? Number three, will this decision reflect the values and the core convictions as a Christian institution of Baylor University? And finally, we ask, is it the right thing to do for the right reason? I would submit if you say yes, 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 you're probably going to make a pretty good decision. And I will say that after three meetings, we've been working with these new rules, these new bylaws, and restructuring. I feel like it's gone very well. It's much more open. It's more candid. A lot of good discussion. Everybody has a voice. But we will be a board, and when we walk out of the room, we may have folks in different opinions, but we'll come to agreement, and we'll be supportive as we walk out of the room. But most of all, we will give our support to Dr. Livingstone as the face and the leader for Baylor University.
Thank you very much, Mr. Allison. Mm-hmm. Dr. Livingstone, thinking back to this time last year, the news cycle was pretty difficult. Mm-hmm. Right. The bad news seemed never to end. But can you tell us what has been the biggest piece of news or maybe an announcement that signals that Baylor is strong, mm-hmm. Resilient, and moving forward?
Yeah. I think there's a number of things that we can speak to that you sort of think about when you look at universities generally. Particularly universities have gone through a really difficult time, and so you worry about enrollment, you worry about fundraising, and then obviously because of some of the work that we've done, you know, are we accomplishing what we said we were going to work through some of the issues that happened? And so with regard to enrollment, we had a very strong freshman class this year. We hit our enrollment target of 3,300. It was the most, I think it was tied for the most highly qualified academic class we've ever had, and it was our most diverse class that we've ever had in the history of the university. And so you're really glad to see that. We're very tied to enrollment from a financial perspective, so that's really important. So then we said, okay, what's happening this coming year? Because we want to see, can we continue that and continue to be successful? And it's still early for the fall class, but right now we're actually tracking ahead of last year in terms of students who've committed to come to the institution compared to this time last year. So we feel like we're going to be on target to hit our class size again for this coming fall. This class right now is tracking higher on the academic index than any of our previous classes that we've ever had. And again, it's one of our most diverse classes ever. So it just sends the message that people want to come to Baylor. We're a unique place. We're a special place. And people know that and want to continue to be a part of the community that we're in. You look at fundraising. We raised over $100 million last year, and that was the seventh year, I believe, in a row that we had done that. And we're actually tracking this year ahead of where we were last year at this time. And so, again, fundraising is an important measure, which suggests that, again, people really are still deeply committed to the institution, are still supporting us, and want to help the university to move forward. And then we are also, as part of the process of bringing healing and resolution to the sexual assault problems that we had 105 recommendations that came out after the finding of facts and the recommendations from Pepper Hamilton. And so the university's worked diligently over the last 2 years to implement those 105 recommendations. And so I think a couple of the most important things that happened this last year were Cozen O'Connor, outside firm, audited those 105 and said that we had completed those 105. And then SAC-COC, which is our regional accrediting body, had put us on warning until we convinced them and assured them that we had addressed those issues, particularly those that had to do with governance and some other issues. And they took us off of warning in the fall. We have our regular visit with them coming up in April. And so those were really good affirmations because we felt like we were making good progress. But to have outside entities, sort of independent, telling us that we are accomplishing what we said we were going to accomplish, that we're moving forward, is really positive news for us. And it shows that that the many, many hours and effort that everybody has put in is paying off, and that we really are a different institution than we were a couple of years ago.
All right. Can you give us an update on the legal front and also on the ongoing investigations? Mm-hmm. And when do we think the lawsuits and these investigations mm-hmm. might eventually be resolved?
Sure, Lori. Well, so right now we have 5 active lawsuits that are out there. And I think it's important to think about when you consider the lawsuits, as we work with each of the survivors in each of these individual cases, they have different needs and how healing and resolution comes for each of them. For some of them, it's some kind of a settlement. For others, it really is going through the legal process and bringing closure that way. And so what we try to do is work with the victims through whatever process they've chosen that helps them the most in bringing closure to the situation. And so those 5 are in process. We have court dates on 2 of them. One is in, I think, fall of 2018. The other court date is in spring of 2019. The case you probably read the most about is what we call Jane Doe's 1 through 10. And that one gets a lot of media attention because there's been a lot of legal discussion and motions around, particularly around discovery, because there's been a lot of questions around from the plaintiff's side of trying to get access to student medical and health records, counseling records for students who are not parties to that particular lawsuit. We have taken the position that those are protected by federal privacy laws because they are not parties to the lawsuit and that FERPA protects those. And so we're really working hard to try to protect students that aren't parties to that lawsuit. And so we're kind of working through that process. So you'll see more about that particular case as we go forward and probably some of the others. With the lawsuits, we anticipate probably a couple of years to work our way through all of those, whether they resolve outside of the court system or within the court system. In terms of investigations, there are also 5 investigations that are ongoing. The Big 12, as you know, is withholding a portion of our funds as we move forward until they feel confident that we have completed the 105 recommendations. And we are very close to bringing closure with the Big 12. I can't give you an exact date of when that will be, but we are wrapping up the work that we're doing with the Big 12 and working very closely with them and cooperating. And I think that's been a very positive process. And I actually think the other institutions in the conference are learning from that as well. And we're encouraging them to pay attention to all the public information we've put out about how we've resolved the 105 so that it helps them to avoid some of the same problems that we had. So Big 12, we hope, will resolve probably sooner than the other ones, but we'll see how that plays out. Cleary and the Office of Civil Rights, the Department of Education, are both doing investigations. We're getting some signals that with some of the changes in the Department of Education that it's possible that those might resolve sooner than we had anticipated, particularly the OCR, although I don't want to get too optimistic about it because you don't know until you see it happen. Cleary can sometimes take up to 3 or 4 years. It likely will be the furthest out of everything that we're working through. But it will depend a little bit on if we see more process changes within the Department of Education. OCR is a case that they're looking at. And again, we hope that that one might actually come to quicker closure than we might have seen in the past. In the past, those have been probably a year or two in the making. The other investigations then are the NCAA and the Texas Rangers. And we continue to cooperate with both of those organizations, providing them with the information that they're requesting and giving them full access to everything that they need. And right now, we don't really have timelines on either one of those. We, of course, hope they come to closure sooner rather than later, but we're doing everything we can to give them the information they need so that they can move forward as quickly as possible.
All right, thank you for that update. Well, both the board and the university have made significant progress, especially over the past 12 to 18 months following the issues of sexual violence within our campus community. With that said, Chairman Allison, many members of the Baylor family still do have questions. How do you go about restoring trust with members of the Baylor family, alumni and friends? You talk a lot about unifying the Baylor family. How do you go about doing that? And then how do you know when you have gotten there?
Well, thank you. Again, when Dr. Livingstone and I talked about this and as we were moving forward, two things we really want to continue doing. Number one, I felt it was very important to restore trust back in the Board of Regents because we'd lost that. Number two was to unify the Baylor family. And we've had a lot of conversations with a lot of different folks. And one thing that I think both of us has learned is we have talked to try to say, how do we start the healing? Because we are a family. And there was a lot of pain. There's been a lot of embarrassment, a lot of hurt that has gone on over the last 2 years. And we need to begin to heal and to have those communications. And tonight is an example of what really we're trying to do, is to have that openness and have that conversation to say, how can we continue to move forward? And I had friends involved in a lot of different places that had a lot of strong feelings. And the one thing that I found as I talked to folks from whether it was the Baylor Line Foundation, the BLR, just our constituents, people in the communities, everyone has a love and a passion for Baylor. And because of that passion and love for Baylor, and we sometimes express it in different ways, but we need to find that path, and we need to be open, more transparent. One of the things we talked about in July at our retreat was truly understanding the difference between transparency and what is truly confidential from a legal standpoint. But we hope that these kind of events, these kind of openness and communicating after every meeting, we do a press conference, talking to folks. I have had the benefit of talking to a lot of different groups of truly Baylor folks that love Baylor. During this last fall, I've told folks, and some of you may have heard me say this, our pastor at First Baptist there in Waco did a series on messy families from the Bible. Well, we're family, and families can get messy. But we just need to come back, and it's only going to take time. You don't restore trust overnight. You earn that trust, and we're going to have to demonstrate that we're worthy of that and continue to move Baylor forward. And that's what's so exciting about Dr. Livingstone being here. You're going to hear about the strategic academic plan. I mean, since I've been on the board, we didn't get a chance to talk about strategy. We were talking about fiduciary and only that. And it's exciting to see that we're starting to move forward. We made mistakes. We've got to correct the way we do our work. And we need to move forward. And we've made a lot of improvements in the, like you've heard from Dr. Livingstone, on our processes and the things where we had some failures. And so all we can do is do it every day, prove that we're worthy of the trust, to earn that trust by doing the right things in the right way for the right reason. And Jeff, I thought healthcare was the most complex, regulated industry in the country. I was wrong. It's academics and academia. That's the most regulated, complex that I've ever seen. So again, I'm just thankful that we've got a great leader that's really helping us to start putting those processes in place. I've always believed good people, good systems, good processes, you're going to have a good organization. We will earn it, and that's what we have to do.
All right. Well, that leads into, Dr. Livingstone, you introduced over the summer to the Baylor family, strong, secure, strategic. What kind of progress is the university then making in each one of those areas?
Sure. So one of the things I worked with the board on and with our leadership team on campus was what our goals needed to be for this year as we sort of led into some longer term thinking and planning. And so we sort of built a set of goals for the year around those three themes: strong, secure, and strategic. And the strong area really focuses on how we build leadership capacity at the institution. And if we don't have the right leadership in place, we're not going to be successful as a university. And so I've worked very hard this year on my leadership team. We call it the President's Council. We've made some changes in that leadership team. We're doing some leadership development with that team. We're doing succession planning, which has really never been done. Frankly, universities in general are about as bad as any type of organization that I've ever seen at leadership development and strategic and succession planning. And we're going to make sure that that's not us and that we're going to do those things well. So we're beginning that process. We have two key leadership positions on my team that we're in the process of filling right now. We've shifted the chief operating officer, will now be a chief business officer position. Reagan Ramsauer is stepping out of that position this summer. So we're deep in the process of identifying candidates for that. We will probably do airport interviews within the next month and hopefully have someone at least named in that role by the end of the spring semester, certainly hopefully before the board meeting in May so that they can come on board this summer. But I feel like we're building a really strong pool there, have a lot of interest, and that's going to be really important as that job sort of, they run the operations of the university, but we also want them to think entrepreneurially about how we should maybe begin to think differently about our financial models, our business models, and other things, because higher education is changing, and we've got to be forward thinking in doing that. The other key position is our provost position, and we have had 5 provosts in the last 3 years at Baylor, and you just can't build a strong academic focus with that much change in your academic leadership. And so it's critical that we find a fabulous person for that role that is deeply committed to being a provost for a stretch at Baylor so we can bring some stability and focus to that area. We have a wonderful interim provost, Michael McClendon, who is working with us right now on our academic strategic plan, and he's doing a fabulous job. We have a search committee. This is a very different process. We have 23 people on our provost search committee because it involves our academic community, so we have a lot of faculty involved in that. And we're kind of on the same time frame for that as we are the chief business officer. So we're collecting resumes and building a pool. We hope to do airport interviews for that towards the end of March as well. And hopefully then again by the end of the semester, early summer, know who's going to be in that position permanently going forward. But I think we feel good about where that pool is developing and the opportunity there and the interest that we're getting in that particular role. So that's the strong and the work that we're doing in leadership. In terms of secure, I've talked some about the financial underpinnings, which are very strong for us, and the university's been very prudent through the years, which has allowed us to remain strong financially even through the last couple of years. The other thing I would say in terms of strengths is really how we're building the culture and climate on campus, and implementing the 105 recommendations has been important in that regard. But we did a couple of climate surveys towards the end of last year, spring of last academic year. We reported those out right before Christmas this year. There was a climate survey on diversity on our campus and a climate survey around the Title IX issues, sexual assault, sexual violence issues. Those are online. Those are available. And they helped us get a sense of where we've made progress, where we still have work to do, both with regard to the sexual violence climate as well as the diversity climate. And so we have mechanisms in place to take what we've learned from those surveys and look at what we need to do in both of those areas to move forward. So that's going to just help us continue to make our campus more welcoming, more secure, a healthier environment for our students and our faculty and staff. And then on the strategic side, that has really been a focus on building out the strategic plan that we'll talk more about and looking to the future. That plan is really building on the vision of Pro Futurus, which was developed about 5 years ago, which is really for Baylor to become a preeminent Christian research university in this country and to have a significant Christian voice among the highest levels of the academy in this country, and then to build out an academic plan that supports that, working with our faculty. And then that plan will also include a significant campaign to support the priorities in the campaign. So this has been a working year for strong and secure and a planning year for strategic. And I think we've made tremendous progress and a lot of collaboration and work together on campus to move all of those initiatives forward.
Why don't we take a few minutes then and talk about the academic strategic plan.
Sure.
What can you tell us about it at this point in time?
Sure. Well, we are calling the academic strategic plan Illuminate, the scripture in Matthew that talks about how we're to be light to the world and let our light shine. And we think that that's what we should be doing as Baylor. We are a unique institution in higher education. There are really no other universities in the country that can be preeminent research universities that are truly deeply committed to their Christian faith, particularly among Protestant universities. So we believe that that is a place we can be light and salt to the world, and so we're calling the plan Illuminate. As I said, it builds on the pro-futurist vision. The last 5 years have been building out kind of the operational side of pro-futurist and really doing a lot for student success, graduation rates, retention rates, and so on. We've made tremendous progress. Our numbers on those have really improved over the last 5 years. Now what we're building out is the academic strategic plan that will move us forward on the scholarly side, the research side, the academic program side, and raise our academic profile nationally and internationally. And so what you'll see embedded in that plan is some academic priorities that our provost has been working on with the faculty to develop in areas where we have strengths, but where with some investment we can really move forward significantly. And those will be in the science, technology, engineering, and math areas, the STEM areas, as well as in the sciences, the social sciences and humanities. There will be a facilities plan in there that underpins and supports the academic strategic plan. There will be a financial model that supports that. Some key elements of the financial model will be maintaining kind of flat undergraduate enrollment and trying to maintain a fairly low tuition increase for undergraduates. We cannot build a preeminent research university on the backs of undergraduate tuition. You just shouldn't do it and you can't do it. And we believe that we need to hold pretty steady where we are with undergraduates. So we've got to find other ways to pay for the advances we want to do strategically and academically. And that will come from growth in graduate and professional education. It will come from increased research activity with grants and contracts. It will come from philanthropy and a major campaign that we will be building out. And then we want to continue to look at how we can be more efficient and frankly how we can be more entrepreneurial, and are there other opportunities to grow our resources beyond some that maybe we've already thought about. And so those will be the areas we'll focus on. And that plan in general will focus on us becoming a preeminent research university, maintaining and really not maintaining, advancing and developing further our Christian mission, continuing to focus on transformative undergraduate education, the critical role of mentoring and teaching on our campus at all levels. We will also continue to support high-level championship athletics. It is a great platform for us. It gives us visibility. And so those are things we're working on. We did a presentation to the board at the February board meeting. I think that was 3 weeks ago now. It feels longer ago almost than that. We did sort of a draft of the plan, some preliminary, and had a really great discussion with the board, had some fabulous feedback. We will then present at the May board meeting a final plan for approval by the board that will include those priorities, facilities, financial model, and the campaign. And so we're excited about moving forward. There's been a lot of energy and engagement of faculty and staff across campus, work with the regents. So I think it's going to be exciting when we get ready to fully roll it out for everybody in more detail. But it's been a lot of heavy lifting in a short period of time. But it's going to be really a fabulous opportunity for the university to move forward in significant ways.
So it was a checkpoint
yes.
in February at the board meeting. So, Mr. Allison, mm-hmm. you had a chance to see Illuminate at this particular mm-hmm. point. What one or two things stood out to you and to the board when you saw mm-hmm. this plan at this point?
It lit us up. No, seriously. I mean, it was enjoyable. There was a lot of energy in the room to be able to talk about strategy. Mm-hmm. We had not, as I said earlier, been able to. And to hear them, as Dr. Livingstone and her team rolled out the strategy draft of the strategic plan, a lot of great discussion, a lot of good feedback. In my old world, we used to talk about alignment when you have a strategy. And we could see the alignment. We can see the alignment with Linda and her team, and we had a working session on the Thursday night, just the board with the deans and with Dr. Livingstone's team, and great discussion, a lot of good give and take feedback, a lot of ideas that were presented back to the management team from the board, but it was one of the more, I felt, exciting and enjoyable meetings because the board was engaged in the right way, talking about strategy and looking, you know, to the future. I'm a person that kind of likes looking out the windshield. I don't like to look out the rearview mirror. And there's a reason the windshield is so much bigger than the rearview mirror. And so I think this gives us an opportunity to begin to move forward with a very, I think, an exciting, and it does also, and I think one of the questions, and Linda mentioned this, is that as we move to this really a tier one research institute and a Christian institution, but still focusing on our undergraduate program, very, very, very critical. It's what I remember the most at Baylor and the great faculty we have. And so I think this allows us then to blend those two, to take us to the next level and to really, I think, advance it. And as Linda says so well, the world needs a Baylor University. If the world ever needed a Baylor University, we live in a very dark world right now, and we can be that light, and that's what we should be. And as they say, the darker the room, the more needed the light, and I think that's where Baylor can take its position, and I think it's uniquely qualified to do that.
All right. One final question, real quickly, Dr. Livingstone. Mm-hmm. Speaking of illuminate and light, if you happen to make your way over to Central Expressway. I know nobody likes to get on Central Expressway in Dallas, am I right? there, or maybe shopping in the Galleria, or you've been on the Baylor campus, you have seen Baylor's new marketing campaign, Where Lights Shine Bright. And Dr. Livingstone, if you can just tell us a little bit about that, about this new lights mm-hmm. campaign, because it means so much to all of us at Baylor.
Yeah. Well, it's been a lot of fun to work on this campaign, and what a great idea that Jason and his team kind of came up with as we think about how do we reintroduce Baylor after going through this period of real darkness as an institution, but knowing that we're a special place that the world needs, how do we reflect that appropriately to the world? And that Light Shine Bright, Baylor Lights theme kind of came out of that. And so we had a lot of fun with it. We did a women's basketball game, a men's game that some of you were probably at where we did some really cool light stuff. We've got all these opportunities on campus for people to take pictures within words like shine and bright and light. And we've lit up the campus. There's green lights all over campus. So there's fun in that, but it's also got a very serious element to it because it does also speak to the Illuminate strategic plan. We're going to really talk about how we give light in the campaign that we'll be moving into. And then it really is also about how we as individuals at the institution, how we as the university as a whole give light to the world. And Joel said it very well in his comments. And so we feel like it speaks to who we are on many, many levels, on a very fun, light level that everybody can enjoy, but also on a very deep, spiritual level for who we are as a Christian institution and what the world needs that we can provide that nobody else can.
All right. We will continue our mm-hmm. conversation with questions from you. Mr. Allison, do you have any concluding remarks or before we get to questions?
Just one thing I want to mention. First of all, thank you all again for being here, and we look forward to your questions. If we didn't address them, we were anxious to hear them. But I'd like to say one other thing that I think we have to remember as we go through these next couple of years, and as Linda said, we got 2 years of heavy lifting yet to keep moving forward, and we got a lot of opportunities. But I want us to always be reminded of the mission of Baylor. It really has really been something that has been a part of who I believe Baylor's all about, and that is to educate men and women for worldwide leadership and service by integrating academic excellence with Christian commitment within a caring community. It's a powerful mission. And I think we have to remember that why we are here as a board and as leadership, it's about the students. We cannot lose sight. This is all about the students. That's why Baylor exists. And we're all probably in this room have been Baylor students. Baylor is where I know I had my life changed. and why I love Baylor. And I think I've heard so many stories. You've got your Baylor story, and a lot of them I've heard. At Baylor, I found my calling. I found my beautiful wife of nearly 49 years who has tolerated me. Was an AO miss back then, but for those of you that are old like us. But seriously, it changed my life. And it was because I was given an opportunity to go to a school like Baylor. So we can never lose sight of students. As we try to bring the family back there, I would urge us to do it for one reason, if nothing else. It's for our students. And when you talk to these students, I used to challenge during these last 2 years, I challenge anybody that were outside. I said, well, why don't you just come and talk to our students? I won't even select them. You can talk to any student on their campus. Talk to them and hear their story and why they're at Baylor and what they are learning at Baylor and why they love Baylor. And I just don't want us to forget that. And I think that's why the unifying the Baylor family and recognizing our responsibility as board is it's about the students. Let's not lose sight of our mission. And I think that will be the one way, Lori, to your question of bringing healing to the family, if we will put them first and foremost in why we exist today.
All right. Thank you very much, Chairman Allison, President Livingstone. Sure. And we'll take your questions now. Mandy Anderson and Toby, are you over there? Toby Barnett, have our microphones. If you have a question, if you'll raise your hand, and if you don't mind, if you'll be so kind as to identify yourselves, just so we know who we're talking to. And anybody have a question for Dr. Livingstone or Chairman Allison? Yes, sir.
Hey, Dr. Livingstone, Grant Center, class 2014. I know one of the pro-futurist goals was a 90% undergraduate placement rate. I wanted to see what the status of that was. I think the last report, at least I saw online, was I think 86% in 2015.
I think that's right, yeah. I think you're right. I think it's in the upper 80s right now. And then, so clearly we're going to continue to work on that and try to move that number up. You know, one of the things that we're building into the strategic plan as we go forward, we're talking about research a lot at the graduate level and with faculty, but the more of that we do at the graduate level, the more it will give opportunities for our undergraduate students to be engaged in undergraduate research, which is really a very significant learning experience for students. And we think that that will also help them from a placement perspective, whether it's job placement or graduate school placement, giving our undergraduate students more of those hands-on learning experience and research opportunities. And then certainly we're continuing to support our career services office. They actually have done some restructuring recently that they believe will bring together some offices on campus that will provide sort of more coherent and integrated support for our students. So the elements that we worked on in the first 5 years that are very student focused will continue into the second 5 years, and we'll continue to make progress on those metrics we haven't reached, or we'll bump up the metrics that we have reached. So we'll add the academic priorities on top of those metrics that are already there and continue to work on those student focused metrics. Thanks for that question.
Thank you, Grant. Other questions? Yes, sir.
Jim Price from Fort Worth, BBA LLB 54. We've appreciated your honesty and everything you've said, but how is Christy?
Oh. Lori, do you want to answer the question about Christy Wallace, our point guard on the basketball team, which you probably all know?
Well, Coach Mulkey did address it today in the media session, and Christy did tear her ACL. I know that, but Coach Mulkey also came in with a bright, cheery demeanor today. Although we lament the loss of Christy, she's just a fantastic young woman and a dynamite leader. But Coach has them focused now on the next man up. It's your opportunity to shine.
And some of them have already this
And they
year.
Have.
Some of the young players.
Sometimes when you have small numbers, a lot of players get to play, and they've played significant moments and significant minutes today and throughout the season. So we'll see what happens. We won that Big 12 regular season championship. We'll go now and see if we can win a couple more championships. That would be a great way to go out, wouldn't it?
Well, would love that. Kim said about the two quarterbacks.
Well, she told the media this. So she said yesterday she sat down with the team, she handed them a card, And it had the name of Nick Foles on it, the Super Bowl winning quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles. And the young man whose name escapes me right now, the redshirt freshman for the University of Alabama, who was inserted in the second half of the national championship game and led the Crimson Tide to a national championship. So she was telling them, you know, here is your opportunity. You know, nobody really knew about Nick Foles. Nobody expected Nick Foles to do what he did. And the same thing with the University of Alabama quarterback. So I tell you, the demeanor in the room changed. Everybody was ready to go run out and practice on the court with the team. And we'd run through a brick wall for Coach Mulkey. So she's got the team in a right frame of mind. And although you just wish you could go back and change what happened to Christy, but she's also in a good frame of mind, and she will be coaching from the bench. You can guarantee that. It's a good question.
You guys all need to drive to Oklahoma City to watch the games this
week.
That's
right.
How many are going to Oklahoma City? Oh, come on. It's not that far.
Yes, sir.
Yes. I'm Mike Markward. I graduated from Baylor in 81. And I have a question, I think, as it relates to furthering the research aspect of attracting more international students. I know that has been a nucleus that has driven a lot of research programs at universities across the country, and also your study abroad program, mainly an international type question.
So let me talk about both of those, international students and then the study abroad. So there has already been some effort put in, it's part of the first 5 years of ProFutures, to grow some the undergraduate population of international students. And I think we're at about 7% or something now, which actually, I was at George Washington, 12 or 13, 14% of the undergraduate population there was international. So we have slowly grown that undergraduate. We intend to do that. You've got to do it carefully, and you want to do it so that you get a diverse set of international students, and then they're all not, the tendency is for them to all come from very limited parts of the world, and that can actually pose challenges if you're not careful about it. So you want to do it strategically. But then as we grow graduate and professional programs, and particularly when you grow your research endeavor, certainly one opportunity there is to look at where there might be pockets of international populations that could be drawn to the programs that we have that would be interested in coming to a Christian faith-based university. And then the good thing, too, about bringing in international students is that then they go back out, not just around the country, but around the world, and they actually have an influence, having come through Christian higher education, Christian PhD programs, which is very rare, and they can then go out and have an influence all around the world on their students and everything. So it's really important. It's an opportunity. We actually have very low international enrollment at Baylor compared to many universities. The benefits to that is you don't get the fluctuations when, you know, we're dealing with immigration questions and some other things that can actually pose challenges. So we are less affected by that if there's a downturn in international enrollment, but there's also an opportunity there. And then the other question was around our study abroad programs. So as part of our SACS accreditation, SACS COC accreditation coming up, we pick an area that we really want to focus on, and we put together this very complex plan for how we're going to do that. We chose to do it around the global experience. And so part of what's embedded in our plan that we're sharing with our accrediting body in April is a global strategy around how we increase opportunities for our students to study abroad, how we choose partner schools, so that not only are we potentially increasing our global experience by bringing more international students in, but we're also sending our students out in significant ways. We already do a lot of that in mission trips add a whole dimension to our experience for students that most universities don't have. But then we also want to grow our experiences just from an educational and learning perspective, whether those are short-term study abroad or whether they're more semester or year-long experiences. And if you've ever talked to a student that's done some of those longer experiences, they're just really spectacular. So both of those are built into the plan in different ways because we know they're important as we try to ensure that our students are prepared for a global world.
Yeah, I think you can read that plan is online. It's baylor.edu/globalbaylor. Yeah. And you can read that full plan there.
Hi, MC Gatsky from Fort Worth. You mentioned in the admissions for this year and next year that you're happy with the numbers and the quality. Is there any indication that there's a tick back in female interest in the university from all the
Interesting question. Mm-hmm. We've actually seen the very opposite. Our female interest in enrollment is probably as high as it has ever been, and Jason, you would affirm that. Where we've actually seen a bit of a dip is in male numbers, which is always a challenge for us. We're always a little bit low on male numbers, lower than we would like to be, and so we're continuing to work on that. We think that there are probably a couple of elements of that based on what our research is telling us. One, we think there could be a little bit of that because we have been working so hard to address the climate for safety and security around sexual assault issues on our campus, that it actually might make males a little reticent about coming and concerned about the atmosphere on our campus. I don't think that's an accurate perception, but you recognize why that could be out there. Whereas people thought females would be afraid to come, I think females recognize that we're taking this seriously and that we're probably going to be one of the safer campuses that you can actually be on right now. But the other thing, and Jason, correct me if I'm wrong on this, this is a piece of data I just heard. Among our prospective students, female students rank us much higher on academic rigor, academic quality than male students do. So there's a gap there. And so, and we're seeing a larger percentage of our students come from out of state than we have in the past, which is actually good because it means you're building a national reputation. And out-of-state students, when they're choosing to go to college from anywhere out-of-state to another institution, academic quality matters a lot to them. It's one of the reasons they'll choose to go out-of-state. So we actually feel like there's an opportunity for us, particularly as we build out a strategic plan that focuses on academic rigor and academic quality and reputation and building out some of our STEM fields, that's an area that we're going to have to message really carefully, particularly in those places where our male prospective students are most likely to pay attention to it. So in some ways, we actually think that difference in perception of the academic reputation of Baylor between male and female students is actually what may be driving those numbers even more than the issues around the sexual violence and sexual assault. And Jason, Jason's our vice president for communications and marketing, so. Yeah, I think the number was 37 last time I saw it, so it bumped up a little bit. So we were glad. Okay. We're usually around 40%, so that is something we've got to pay attention to.
Right. Randy Daniels, I actually happened to do the Dean's Study way back when I was in school, and it was a marketing research study conducted with Arthur Anderson, we plotted it on an old plotter and made pie charts.
Those you could do it days. On your phone now, probably, yeah. Couldn't you? Yeah.
So the research is very interesting, and I think the whole feeling in the room is we just feel you guys light, and I want to applaud y'all for the illumination, and I've been stuck on Central Expressway and felt illuminated. One thing in light of the fourth goal of the board, doing the right thing for the right reason. And I think sometimes you poll on problems like the female versus male right. perception. In the FERPA and the Jane Doe suit, how can we communicate? What's the best way to do it, I guess, is my question. If you can show that you're showing care for both the victims and the privacy and the perpetrators and all that's involved in that's a very, as you called it, emotionally sensitive perception issue. How can you best do that? How can you keep this communication line going with us so that we see the investigations and the progress? What's the best way for you guys to do that?
Well, it's a great question because, unfortunately, the headlines you see and the stories that come out make it sound so totally different. And all we can do in being respectful of all the requirements of the confidentiality and the regulation, but is to continue to try to message what we are doing, what are those processes, how are we handling it, and make sure that our folks handle it appropriately so that we can continue to see progress and improvement in those areas. Because I found we were so tied and bound by certain things, but we have to get our story. Mentioned Jason. Jason was one of our new members that came in January of last year. Done a great job communicating, trying to get that changing so that the noise outside and all the misrepresentations, quite honestly, I can say that, we have a voice, and that's why it's so great having Linda as the face of Baylor, who can be there talking. And again, that's what we're trying to achieve, is to continue to message what Baylor's about and who we are.
And I want to say too that we are in prayer for you guys. Oh. And have to deal with those things of protecting the university, but caring for individuals at the same time.
And could I just say, we welcome your prayers. I have told folks, one way we'll get through this, I truly believe, is through prayer and humility. And so if I could ask you all again tonight, daily, pray for Baylor, pray for our students, pray for Dr. Livingstone and her team as they lead the university. Because having been a CEO, been on boards, this is a tough, tough environment. And we're not even talking about some of the environmental impacts from the external that are coming into the universities today that we see every day. And for, again, it's back to the light in a dark world. So prayer works. I believe in it.
And Lori asked me at the beginning, you know, what I had appreciated most or things I'd noticed. And I have to tell you, I have so many people tell me the same thing, that they're praying for me, for us, for our students. And we have family or parent prayer networks around the country. So we know that people are praying for us. We feel it. And it's such a sincere communication back to us. So thank you all that are doing that. And we certainly hope that you will continue. And it's much appreciated and needed.
Yes, ma'am.
We'll go back here.
Next. Yes. I'm Harriet Harrell. And I also want to say thank you for being here and for being open and transparent. I want to add a little bit to Randy's question. What are the actual things that are happening on campus that are different? If a student is feeling threatened, if there is an incident, what happens? What are the steps that you've put in place?
No, that's a great question. And I will tell you, it's dramatically different than it was. We just weren't doing the things we should have been doing on campus around a lot of areas. So let me kind of start at the beginning of the process. We do tons of training on campus now. We do it with students so that students understand how to report either themselves if something happens, or we're really working hard with our students to look out for each other to try to help prevent things from happening. There's a green dot program that we're implementing in that regard. And then if they see something, to report, so that it's not just because something happened to you. Because we find victims oftentimes don't want to report. There's a lot of reasons why they won't. So we need other people being willing to help us know when things happen. So there's tons of training with students on that. There's also a lot of training with students around consent and what does it mean, because that's what often happens in these cases. And there's we want to help students understand that as a Christian institution, we believe that sex outside of marriage isn't the appropriate choice for them, but we also are honest about recognizing that our students are sometimes going to make a choice that's different than that. If they're going to do that, they need to be very safe and thoughtful about what they're doing, and they need to recognize some of the issues that come into play. So we're doing tons of training. Freshmen, when they come in, there's training for students all the way through the process. We do extra training with our student athletes. We do extra training in Greek life, particularly as we're getting ready for a rush in the spring semester, which we just completed. So there's lots of that training. And we actually, in our sexual climate survey, found that students, like 93%, 97% knew where to report if something happened. So that number was like off the charts good. So we feel like we're doing a good job there. What we've got to work on with students is there's still about 75% of students said they felt confident that if they reported something, it would be handled appropriately. I think that should be like 100%. But I've seen data from other schools. I think that number's pretty consistent with what you see at other schools. But clearly, we've got to continue to help people know that by doing it and by dealing with issues when they're reported, then students will gain confidence and that number will go up over time. So there's opportunity there. So training to report and to know what's going on so that they're aware. We've also done tons of training with faculty and staff. All of our faculty and staff on campus are what are called responsible employees, which means they have to report if they hear something. And so they have to report it to Title IX or to the police. We have many ways, we have multiple avenues where those could be reported, and those all funnel into the same place. So that we're getting, and what we're actually seeing now is we're getting more reports from people who aren't the victims, but by others that are telling us about things. So we're hearing about cases we wouldn't have normally heard about. Once it gets reported, it depends on where the report goes. Typically, it would either go to the police or to our Title IX office if it's a sexual assault case. And then investigations happen in both places. If it goes to Title IX, they will meet with the victim. And the victim gets to has quite a bit of power in these situations to decide if they want to pursue the case and if they want to report it to the police. So we're very good about telling them what their rights are, what their opportunities are. And if they don't want to report it to the police, it doesn't get reported to the police unless our, unless we believe, our Title IX office believes that there is great risk of harm to others or there was violence involved in some way. So there's a judgment call there, but that happens in Title IX. If it goes to the police, then what you would see is oftentimes kind of parallel investigations with Title IX and with the police. And sometimes the police will want their investigation done first, and then we'll hold the Title IX investigation until the police investigation happens, and then Title IX will take over. Once the police does an investigation, they turn the evidence over to the DA's office, and then the DA's office makes the decision about whether they think there's enough evidence for an arrest or if it needs to go to a grand jury or something. But our police department is then done with it until we know what the DA is going to do. Title IX does an investigation. We have a cadre of investigators who will talk to everybody that we know of that has anything to do with the case. And they will then investigate, and then they'll adjudicate and make a recommendation. We have a lot of protections built in for due process, for everybody to have sort of equal access to the information. And these are all things we didn't have before. And then once a decision is made and rendered, then either party can appeal that decision. And we have a committee of experts in the field, not the people that investigated or heard it. These are all outside, most of them are outside the university. And then that appeal goes to that committee, whether it comes from the complainant or the respondent. And then once that appeal is done, if there's an appeal, then if there is any kind of discipline or anything, then that is taken care of. And that would depend on the nature of the findings in the case. We've also done, completely reorganized our police department around these issues and done training. We do trauma-informed training with our police department now because they didn't know how to interview a victim in the cases and to know what kinds of questions to ask and how to ask. We've doubled the size of our Title IX office. We've doubled our counseling center staff on campus. We've opened the Beecham Addiction Recovery Center. Alcohol and abuse is one of the huge problems in sexual assault. I don't know, there's probably other, but so we've made dramatic changes from training all the way through the support services someone needs. So what we're hoping is we're doing everything we can to prevent these incidences from happening. We wish we could prevent all of them. That's probably something that we can never be able to do as much as we'd like to. Then if one does get reported, we have the right processes and procedures in place to investigate and adjudicate. And then we also have put in huge resources into trying to ensure that we're providing the right support for the individuals involved to give them the counseling they need, the academic support they need, and so on, so that they can continue even after a traumatic situation to try to complete their education and get the support that they need.
Hi, we're the Larsons from Fort Worth. I have three bears. I'm an adopted bear, but we have three bears in our house. My question is for the football. Can you ask Coach Rule, I'm going to make my flight reservations for a bowl game?
We will tell him that you are planning that and that he needs to get the team on board with that. I think they're well on board with that, and we're excited about where they're going to go and had a great recruiting class this year. And I have to say, even through a very tough year, we traveled with the football team several times this year. And, you know, even through a really difficult season with a very, very young team, they had good attitudes. They continued to fight hard to the very end, even through that game here at TCU. And they never gave up. And that is hard when you're losing, and that is hard when you're young. And that says so much about the coach and the way they worked with those players. And the other thing I would have to say, those young men were unbelievably respectful and gracious, and they always spoke to me and Brad, even after a game, when they had lost and they were, you know, feeling awful as they came back on the plane, they would always stop and shake our hand and thank us for being there. So a Coach Rule is, you know, doing the right things to build a quality team on and off the field and teaching those young men to be respectful and to do the things you have to do to be successful in life that have nothing to do with football. So we're proud of what he's doing and what that team's going to be.
I'm Betty Gilbreth Price and class of 59, live in Fort Worth. First, I want to say we've had 18 family members to graduate from Baylor.
Wow. Starting. Hey, I love it.
Starting in 1911. Oh, wow. So I think we're considered a Baylor family pretty much.
Definitely.
So, one, I want to thank you for your interview of Laura Bush the other night at the wonderful nursing school gala. That was really a great way to do that. Thank you. The other thing, long-time involvement with the Baylor alumni through the years, right, which over 100 and some odd years, was what did so many of the services, raising the money, keeping people involved. And then there's been the problem that took place. But I want to say thank you. I think efforts are being made. I think people are beginning to reach back and hold hands and feel like it's family again, which is what I think we all want. And I just want to thank you for your efforts to do that and to be inclusive. And it's beginning to feel a lot better. So
thank you
for all those efforts. And we just want to be supportive of what you're doing because it's been great.
Oh, thank you. Really appreciate that. That's very kind.
I'm Joe Farrell. I graduated from Baylor 1963. My wife is poking on me while I'm trying to talk to you.
She's afraid you're going to give away how old she is.
The mores have changed so much from the time when I went to Baylor, because when I'd pick up a girl at the dorm, we had to have her back in at 10 o'clock. And things were just a lot more careful and more controlled at that time.
Right.
My biggest concern, of course, the social thing, the sexual things, they always happen and they always will. But at the same time, when I see things now with so much alcohol and drugs occurring off campus and students going off campus getting completely bombed, and then going back to someone's apartment, I've asked my wife, is it, surely they don't think they'd go back and play Monopoly. Yeah, you know, so I don't understand what's really happened with the changing culture and how you ever control that. I don't know. I know you're trying.
Yeah, it's
but
a great
things
question.
Have changed so much from the Baylor that I knew many, many years ago.
Yeah. Right. No, it's a great point, and it's an ongoing challenge for us and for any campus around the country. Some things I would say that we're doing to try to address those issues. One, we're really trying to do a lot of alcohol education and helping students understand the risks of consuming too much alcohol and to be wise about their choices. That's part of the reason we're trying to help people help each other. If you see a friend that's had too much to drink and really isn't capable of making decisions for themselves, you know, help them to get out of a difficult situation and get them back to somewhere they can be safe. That's why the Addiction Recovery Center is so important. We're working on a couple of amnesty policies. One is around particularly around alcohol, because oftentimes when you have sexual assault situations, people have been drinking, both one or both of the parties. And so we had people that were afraid to report an assault because they had been drinking, and then they were afraid they would be disciplined for drinking, and so they don't report the sexual assault. Well, obviously the sexual assault is a much worse offense than the drinking. So we have an amnesty policy now so that students wouldn't be disciplined for the drinking offense, because if they're reporting in a sexual assault. But we're also working on how we can allow it to be safe for students to come back to campus after having drunk too much, so that they can come back to their dorm room or come back to a safe place on campus. without thinking they have to go to somebody's house off campus, because we have heard that that's a problem, and they go over to somebody's house because they're afraid to come back to campus for fear they're going to get caught having been drinking. And so we're working on ways that we can have sort of, mechanisms by which they can come back and they can go to their CL or they can go to somebody in their residence hall and say, I know I was drinking, I shouldn't have been, but I need a place to be safe. And so we're working on some of those kinds of mechanisms. The other thing we're trying to do is provide more opportunities on campus for students to have activities and fun things and interesting things to do on campus, so they don't always think they have to go off campus on Thursday, Friday, Saturday night to have fun. And so we've got a lot of programming on campus, a lot of activities on campus that we think is helping some. But it's an ongoing challenge, and there's such a culture of drinking, and you call it kind of the hookup culture among young people, where their values around drinking and sex are just very, very different. And so you're fighting cultural challenges, but we've got a lot of people putting a lot of effort into it, and we've got a lot of students that care deeply about trying to help work through these issues as well. So they're not easy issues to address, but all universities are dealing with them. Frankly, we share a lot of information across universities. This is an area where you don't compete, you collaborate to try to help everyone get better at this.
Okay, we've got time for one more question.
Ben Gatsky, School of Music, 98, and MBA in Information Systems, Masters in 2000. I'm heavily invested in Baylor. Thank you and your predecessors for making our degrees more valuable over time. You talked in Pro Futurus about the academic, the research, the STEM programs, which I think of as the brain of the university. What about the School of Music program and the religion and other programs that are the heart of the university? Mm-hmm. Where do those fit into the plan?
If you kind of look at some of the traditional metrics that speak to academic quality, research doctorates, research dollars, and so on, we're actually strongest in the humanities and in some of the social sciences. And in fact, the music school, Dean Mortensen is probably, he's amazing, and I love Dean Mortensen. He is probably, I don't know, he may be the best dean of all of our deans at articulating why what we're trying to do matters. And he is working diligently with our provost, with his advisory board on how the music school contributes to moving us forward in terms of the research and the educational programs that they're doing. And so we're actually being very intentional about all of the, and I didn't mention this before, but all of the initiatives that are embedded in the academic strategy that we're working on are interdisciplinary initiatives. None of them are embedded in one department or one college or school. They all cut across different departments and different schools. And so every school on campus can find a way to participate in one or more of those initiatives. And music is going to be deeply involved. And again, Dean Mortensen has just been a champion. And the Regents love him because they want him at their table when we have these discussions, because he's so good at articulating what we're trying to accomplish.
And one of my learnings, and congratulations on being in the music school, we have a world-class music department that is, and I learned when we were doing some discussions, they go recruit students just like football and basketball recruits, extreme athletes that are the best. They go after the musicians, and that's why it's a world-class department. And so I've learned, because I have no talent, I can't even play the radio, which nobody has one anymore except me. But it is true to what you're saying, and I agree 100% with what Linda's.
I'm going to go to New York with them in the spring. They just went through a competition. I don't know if you all are familiar. They have an internal competition in the music school, and the students that are selected from that get to go to New York, and they get to perform in Carnegie Hall. And so I'm going to go with them in the spring and hear at least part of what they're going to get to do in New York. It's a really great program, great rewards for some of those unbelievably talented young people.
Yeah, I think they're there May 24th and 25th.
That's right.
Is that right? They're at Carnegie Hall. That is,
I know, it's
that
very
is
cool.
An awesome opportunity. Awesome. Well, we thank you all so much for your time today and for being here with us. We love being in the city of Fort Worth and among our Baylor family here. Great conversation, great questions. And thank you, Dr. Livingstone.
Our
thank
pleasure.
You, Chairman Allison. We appreciate it this evening. And an important note, if you parked here at the hotel, please see some of our staff in the back. They have vouchers for you. So that'll be a nice way for the Baylor family to be able to take care of your parking this evening. So a nice way to reciprocate for your time. So thank you all so much.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Traveling mercies to all of you tonight.